Welcome into Molson. Oh, it's not. It's...
That was muscle memory.
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
Pre-game. Woo!
To take you behind the curtain.
Wow, that was actually muscle memory. I just blacked out.
We are in the studio that we do Molson Leafs hockey, changing it up.
I
no television today.
Just went into full.
That was autopilot
mode.
That was unbelievable.
Let's start again. Welcome to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan only. We are on radio only.
Do we know what to do in here?
I went pilot mode. Welcome.
That was wild.
You see, your face was so good. It's Justin and Ailish. We're here for the next hour and a half on the Fan Pregame.
And there is a Leaf game tonight, but
yeah,
we're not in charge of that.
We're not. But we will get you set for it here over the next hour and a half. It's 7:30 puck drop. It's on Sportsnet Television. And we'll have Anthony Petrielli of Maple Leafs Hot Stove. That's probably why I said what I said. Maple Leafs Hot Stove. Leafs.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it was.
He's going to come at 6:10. Sam Cosentino of Sportsnet, of course, will join us at 6:30. And then we have a new segment to debut at 7 o'clock. It's called AI-lish. Inspired by.
I thought it was Ask AI-lish.
Ask AI-lish. And it is inspired by, well, my name is perfectly spells AI-lish, if you didn't know that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We
didn't have to make any, adjustments.
No
there.
Adjustments. You just put a space in between AI and Lish. And it's, we're going to ask AI-lish, the AI version of Ailish, some important questions, and she will answer.
Yeah. Like everyone's using AI for things nowadays. Like I feel like I'm the only one who doesn't use it. I don't have any need for it. I feel like, and thank God, the only thing that is AI proof is sports radio. But I guess we're testing the boundaries
know.
Of that.
I went total AI mode there and just went off the rails.
That's true. That was an AI moment for sure.
We got lots to go through today.
But again, we're kind of testing that out. Like if Ask AI-lish is the greatest segment in radio history, then they might not need us.
It could be. Lots to direct your attention to on the television side tonight. If you are wondering why we're not on television, well, because New Jersey and Carolina is going to be underway in mere moments on Sportsnet 360. That's game two, Carolina with a 1-0 lead. That will also be part of a multi-screen viewing experience for you. Ottawa and Toronto, as we mentioned, at 7:30 puck drop. Minnesota and Vegas, also a game two. That's an 11 p.m. puck drop, so get ready for that. And then your Blue Jays and Houston Astros will be on at 8 p.m. here on the radio and also on Sportsnet 1.
Yeah, big one for the Blue Jays tonight. Looking to rebound in Houston. Drop game one, 3-game set last night. Limited to 2 hits. Maybe predictably shut down by Hunter Brown, who is a dominant pitcher. Gausman wasn't as sharp. And they get a dude that no-hit him last year in Ronel Blanco tonight. So even with that, like Chris Bassitt takes a 0.77 ERA into his 5th start of the year. The pitching matchup should favor the Blue Jays based on that, I suppose. But I don't know. The vibes have been not as good lately for the Blue Jays as the offense continues to let quality pitching down, even if it wasn't all that quality from Gausman last night.
Okay, let's get into some Leafs-Sens thoughts. Game two will be in about an hour and a half on Sportsnet there on the television side. And we were in attendance for game one, which was Sunday night. And there is a lot of things to be feeling confident about if you're a Leafs fan going into tonight. But maybe cautiously confident, cautiously optimistic, because every game is a completely different story. I don't know if you believe in momentum going from one to another, but Leafs fans can probably feel pretty confident about the way the power play looked. Like we're going to get into this with Anthony Petrielli in a couple minutes, but I was not a fan of the 5-4 power play. I remember many times on our Molson Leafs hockey segments that I said, I don't know, I don't love it.
Old takes exposed. We were kind of banging on that.
But it wasn't working during that period of time. It wasn't in a good spot, and I didn't have the patience that the Leafs clearly do to continue to have it for the rest of the regular season and into the postseason, and it started clicking near that final couple weeks of the regular season and, of course, looked great on Sunday. So shout out to the belief that you could run a 5-forward power play, and it is working so far.
Yeah, I guess my biggest question heading into this game is how many times will they be able to deploy that 5-man power play? Mm-hmm. A lot of the conversation online and on radio has been about, okay, did the Leafs get the benefit of a whistle, or were the Ottawa Senators just not understanding of the line that you can and cannot cross in the playoffs. And I think maybe a combination of both with the Leafs. Yeah, maybe getting one more power play than they deserve. Which one, I'm not really sure, but certainly they didn't let much go. And I'm not one that just assumes because I'm terminally online that referees and NHL officials are terminally online and looking at what people are talking about. So I don't actually expect it to change. But will Ottawa change their playing style? Will they realize, hey, we got to tone it down just a little bit. We tasted it the other night. Now we need to react. And will Ottawa keep themselves out of the penalty box to ensure that Toronto's best weapon and maybe their great weakness isn't given the opportunity to make a difference in the game and consequently in the series? So I think that's, like, if you're checking off things that the Senators have to do, not mm-hmm. that we necessarily have to do that on Toronto Radio today, but it would be staying out of the box because it was just hot knife through butter for the Maple Leafs power play.
Yeah, a lot of discourse about reffing and cross checks and how fair it was. But I just think regardless of that, whether the Sens feel like they were slighted or they feel like they didn't have the composure, or as Travis Green put it, maybe that the Leafs were really good at selling stuff, I just picture them playing a tighter game tonight, dialing it back in, not being the instigators in the scrum, not trying to go for that extra cross check. They clearly got outworked on the power play and they don't want to give the Leafs that opportunity tonight. So I could see them at least playing a bit of more of a calm game. I want to see that because I want to see the Leafs also beat the Sens without having to rely on power play only. Like the 5-on-5 game was great, and we'll talk to Anthony in a few minutes about it. I don't know if I was like giving Sens like the benefit of doubt that they won the 5-on-5 game, and if it wasn't for the power plays, they would have won the game. But I like to see a game that is officiated in a way that both teams get to play a little bit of hockey and it's not just advantage after advantage.
Easier to win the 5-on-5 game when you were never really in the game.
Yeah.
Because score effects are a real thing. They happen, they occur, mm-hmm. and they affect games. Clearly the Maple Leafs weren't chasing goals and Ottawa was, so it's going to look a little mm-hmm. bit differently. It will be tilted in response to game state, and I think that's exactly what we saw. I guess one more variable tonight would be Brady Tkachuk. It was the Ridly Gregg show from Ottawa Senators perspective. Maybe he got a little bit of a bite on Anthony Stolarz, who I don't know if it was celebrated when he was on the ice. I don't know if there was really any worry, but maybe some concern given that he is so important and he is a guy that, you know, not necessarily the most reliable in terms of health, has been hurt this year, has been hurt previous. Mm-hmm. Don't want to put that out in the world. But Gregg did get a shot in on him, and he was the pest in that game. And maybe Nick Cousins makes it a second pest tonight. Mm. And maybe Brady Tkachuk decides he needs to wear more of that pest role tonight. And they get a little bit more greasy in that sense, where they dial it back from hits from behind, boarding, checking, cross-checking, all that stuff. And the physicality from a few guys like Brady Tkachuk is the uptick that the Senators are looking for just to affect the game in more positive ways. But for the Leafs, I think, you know, there's a zigzag thing that happens in playoffs, right? You, the one team that didn't like the result, they usually have an adjustment, and the team that won doesn't feel the need to adjust. So I think if you're looking at a team to change in some way, it would be the losing team, mm-hmm. and therefore it's the Ottawa Senators who need to make that adjustment.
Sportsnet Stats tweeting out just a couple of minutes ago, Maple Leafs have not won consecutive home games in a playoff series since 2004 East Semis versus the Flyers. So they've been really good at home this year.
I was going to say that's Senators territory, but that was after beating the Senators.
They've been really good at home this year, and Anthony Stolarz has been really, really good at home this year. But being able to match that tonight, being able to bring that same momentum a day later when the dust has settled and the emotions have been removed and then brought back into it, is like where I think we'll see the real Leafs and the real Sens in a game two matchup, which is tonight, 7:30 on Sportsnet. Okay, let's bring in Anthony Petrielli of Maple Leafs Hot Stove to help us get set for game two. Anthony, appreciate you coming on a game day. How's it going?
I'm good. How about you?
We're good. We've got a lot to go through. Obviously, it was a pretty fantastic game one, if you know you write about the Leafs or you like the Leafs. But I want to ask you, because you had a great column up on Maple Leafs Hot Stove, like, for you, the number one most encouraging thing from that checklist-filled game one, where basically everything felt like it was going right for the Leafs, like, what's the one thing that you felt the most confident about, maybe being an indicator of how the series could go?
Oh, the one thing. I mean, I want to lean special teams just because it's just been their downfall so many years. Like, we looking at it cumulatively, prior to the start of this series. Their PK is like under 75% and their power play is under 17% over like the history of the Matthews, Marner, Nylander era. And you're not going anywhere with a really bad penalty kill and a really bad power play. Like, you could maybe survive one, but you definitely can't survive both. So, you know, their penalty kill probably got a tad lucky with the Stolarz knob stick save, but that one sequence aside, like, their penalty kill looked good. Obviously their power play potted three, and then, you know, the power play being successful also kind of bleeds into just the top guys producing. Like, they're kind of one in the same. So, you know, they need at least one of those units to be really good. So to watch them both get off to good starts is huge for them.
Do you expect the game to be officiated differently? I made the joke that, you know, I don't think referees are on Twitter tracking what everyone's saying about the series. I don't think it works that way. But, you know, there is a disparity, I suppose. There are some calls that may have been looked at through a finer tooth comb. And we know that round one is a little bit more liberal in terms of the penalty taking. But maybe referees and officials look at that game and think, okay, maybe there was a little too much given to the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Ottawa, you know, I don't want to use the word complained, but I'm sure they vocalized their feelings, right, to the, you know, the official for the series. But, you know, if you kind of look around the league, it's like Montreal definitely wasn't happy last night with the officiating. And I was kind of watching all of these series and people complaining about various officials and calls and kind of thought to myself, like, this is usually how the first three or four games go of every series in round one, where people complain. And then towards the end of the series, they get, you know, the whistle gets put away. But I mean, like, to answer your question, yeah, I do think the officiating will be a little bit different tonight. You know, I would be floored if Ottawa got, you know, six penalties again, kind of thing. Like, they'd really have to go out of their way. And at the same time, I'm sure Ottawa is going to put a bit more of a premium on just playing discipline. Like, that, you know, they did do some of those things to themselves. I'm sure, you know, as much as they don't like some of the calls and whatnot, like, they also have to look in the mirror. Like, they were partly to blame.
I wonder about this 5-forward power play and where you stood a couple months back, because I wasn't really a fan. It wasn't working at the time that I wasn't a fan, so I'll be honest about that. I didn't have the patience really to want to see them kind of fight it out, and obviously it worked in game one and it worked at the end of the regular season. Like, where were you on the 5-forward power play, and are you having to kind of, you know, swallow your words like I am?
I mean, it was hard at times to kind of bounce back and forth, and in particular, it was hard to sort out what was what for the power play in general, just because of the way Austin Matthews was playing mid-season. Like, so much of what he did mid-season, playing hurt or, you know, whatever the case was like, it was hard to sort through because you couldn't tell what to take seriously or not. Like, it made a huge difference. But, you know, the thing I like about the five forwards is I think everyone is in the best possible spot for them individually. Like, Matthews on the half wall one-timer side, Nylander on the one-timer half wall side. Like, I think Marner is either really good down below the goal line, which is where Spencer Carberry had him a few years ago, or up on the point where he is. Like, he could go either one. And then Tavares is really good in the bumper, and Nyes is obviously really good in front. So, like, all of those independent pieces I really liked. I just wasn't sure, and I'm still not, if they're going to give anything back the other way, and especially without getting too far ahead of anything. Like, Florida's really good at shoving it down your throat when they're shorthanded. It's like, that is my concern about them, if they're going to be a liability the other way. But, like, when they're in zone and they have the puck, like, they're full marks.
I never really quite thought about it that way, but I think you nailed it. Everyone is in the exact position they need to be. I guess it's just that they have five forwards in those positions. And you know, I will be cringing in, you know, maybe a second or third round series when Mitch Marner is defending a 2-on-1 in a big spot. But I guess we'll worry about that when they get there. In terms of Berube's lineup for the playoffs, for game one against the Senators, and I imagine for game two here, is there anything you didn't like?
Yeah, I didn't understand Max Domi on the second line. It was like the whole process behind it was so bizarre. Like, they played the entire season really without him there. Like, he was there a little bit in the beginning of the season. They realized it didn't make sense. And then they never did it again until with like three games left in the year. You're playing the Habs on a back-to-back, a Carolina team that, you know, didn't put an honest effort in for like a week and a half or 2 weeks to end the year. Then you play Buffalo, who admittedly they have been good, but, you know, like they had been good at that point, but like, I don't think anyone was watching that Leafs Sabres game going like, wow, the Sabres are a good hockey team. And then you played Detroit at the end of the year with nothing to play for. And that's what they played like, other than Alex DeBrincat trying to get 40. So like, I don't know what they were looking at in that scenario. And Max Domi played like, he made no mistake that shouldn't have worked. And I know Craig Berube has kind of like chalking it up to like, oh, it's just matchups. He knows, like, it was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we haven't got the official line rushes for tonight. They're set to take the ice in probably about 45 minutes, so we'll see. But I think that was glaring to us in our pregame show, you know, going through everything, be like, this is interesting. And I tried to be the optimist and spin it like, oh, Domi's got the passion. Like, he's going to come out. He watched his dad, Ty Domi, and all these early Battle of Ontario series, and he shared that great social media clip. Like, I tried to convince myself it would work, and it didn't. But I want to ask you about someone that I think has been getting better over the last couple of weeks, just in terms of settling in. That's Scott Laughton. And I wonder for you, when you look at just the time that maybe it took to get him into a place where he's feeling like a contributor, are you seeing that a little bit more of settling in, a little bit more confidence from Scott Laughton in the Maple Leaf sweater?
Yeah, he looks really good. And you know, kind of speaking of Max Domi, like, not to pile on him, but like, Laughton and Domi are a little bit oil and water. Like, I think that played a role in it as well. Like, they're just, I don't know if those two guys are particularly compatible, and they played a lot of time together early on. And so I think, you know, you have the initial shock of getting traded. You have a guy who hasn't played a meaningful hockey game in like, what, 5 years? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you're coming home, like, there's all of that. And then, like, on the ice, he's playing with line mates that probably don't really gel. And then, you know, now he's kind of formed this line with Lorenz and Yarncroc. And to me, he's the anchor of that line. And it's a little bit, it's more simple. It's just simple cycle, simple get the puck to the net, crash the net. Everyone checks well. And he looks just far more comfortable with those kinds of line mates, as opposed to, you know, playing with skill guys and like a little bit more maybe pressure to produce offensively. Like this is a big deal if he can kind of hold this role and that line can be a critical line, because they're stealing shifts against the other team's good players, which just means, you know, you get an extra shift or two for Matthews line or Tavares line against a third or fourth line, as opposed to making them do all the heavy lifting the entire time. Like, it's a significant role, and, you know, it's nice to see him kind of settle in. Like, he was really good in game one.
Yeah, the fourth line is suddenly the third most important line for the Maple Leafs. Like, we don't have to do the number thing, because I guess it's not necessary, but unless they're chasing games, that is going to be the line relied on more. The Lorenz-Laughton combination is maybe found money here because it seems to have brought balance to the roster. And I guess my theory on where Domi started is that, yeah, they didn't work with Laughton, and Laughton and Lorenz does work, and Domi and Robertson on the same line may not work, so we got to find a spot for Domi, and that's on the second line with John Tavares and William Nylander. I think that's how the cookie ended up crumbling. In terms of Brady Tkachuk and the Senators, do you expect number 7 for Ottawa to supersede Ridly Gregg in terms of public enemy number 1 tonight? I was surprised that someone took that role away from Brady.
Yeah, I mean, you know, low-key, like, Gregg has a little bit of a history boiling here. Mm-hmm. Like, as much as the attention constantly goes on Brady, like, there's one guy who's really, you know, I don't know if gone out of his way, but he's definitely made his mark in a number of different games comparative to anything Brady's done. But, you know, Brady looked like a guy that missed a bunch of hockey in April. Like, he threw a few hits early, looked like he kind of ran out of gas as the game went on. Like, he definitely didn't assert himself in the way that one might, you know, anticipate that he would. And it's fair to note as well, like, he's also going up every shift against Jake McCabe and Chris Tanev, like, in particular Chris Tanev, right, as like the left winger going against the right D. Like, that's a tough matchup. Like, those are two veteran like really high-end shutdown defensemen. Like, they're, you know, some credit should go their way as well. But yeah, I'd be surprised if Tkachuk doesn't figure out a way to make an impact. Like, he knows he wasn't good enough. He knows the team wasn't good enough. Like, he's the captain. Like, he's going to step up at some point and make his mark. If it's not this game, then it's going to be when they go back home to Ottawa on Thursday.
Yeah, I think it's something that Leafs should be anticipating, is that it's not, I don't think it'll be a quiet Brady Tkachuk series. And it looks like his brother might make a return tonight, conveniently, for game one of that series. Like, we might be talking a lot of Tkachuk impact over the next little bit. We're talking to Anthony Petrielli of Maple Leafs Hot Stove ahead of Leafs and Sens. It's game two. We'll have that on Sportsnet at 7:30 for the puck drop. Linus Allmark definitely being used for Sportsnet stats is loving to show the Allmark playoff history, because it hasn't been great. And game one stats aren't great, you know, allowing six goals. But how much are you putting on his shoulders? Because there were some nice grade A opportunities for the Leafs. There was a bunch of power play goals. Like, I don't know if you do blame pie or who gets what percentage of it, but I don't know if I'm putting it all on Linus Allmark. But it's easy to do that when you look at the way he's played previously in playoff series and say, uh-oh, do the Sens have a problem here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was all his fault. I mean, the first two goals are Ekman Larson going downhill with not a soul around him, you know, and it's a clean look. And obviously a Mitch Marner breakaway. Like, at the same time, if Allmark's going to play like that all series, it's going to be a quick series. And for me, I kind of go back to last year when he was on Boston and the Leafs beat them in game two. And they looked super comfortable against Allmark. You know, they had no problem with him last year. And in my opinion, I mean, we'll never technically know, but like, if Allmark played the whole series last year against Boston, even with all the injuries and whatnot, I don't know if this is a hot take, but like, I think the Leafs would have won that series. Like, they looked very comfortable against them. So like, he's got something to prove. Like, he hasn't been good in the playoffs his entire career, period, which is only 11 games. And, you know, to this point, it's kind of like, it's strange. It's almost like Andrei Vasilevsky at this point, where like, the Leafs just bizarrely look very comfortable against him.
Last one for you, Anthony. Is there a non-Leafs and Senators storyline in the Stanley Cup playoffs that has piqued your interest?
That's a really good question. I think when I go through it, I think that Tampa series, which, you know, it hasn't started, as you mentioned, with like Tkachuk conveniently set to come back. Like,
yeah, I thought we weren't doing that anymore.
Not we're doing it for him.
You know, Friedman reporting, no one's starting game one, and you got to come back
ready.
82 or game three, but apparently Matthew Tkachuk will.
Honestly, I'm glad that the league waited long enough for him to get back healthy, like, you know, to get the nice Tuesday start for game one. But to me, like, that series, I think, is going to be electric. Like, that, those two teams have the potential to me to be like, whoever wins that series is going to represent the Eastern Conference Finals, like, it represent the East in the Stanley Cup Final, sorry. And so when I kind of like look at the storylines, like, Florida obviously handed it to Tampa last year. Tampa's had an incredible year, like crazy, like plus 70 something goal differential. You know, everybody looks great. Like, all these moves that they made are panning out. And so that's the one that, like, is, even though it hasn't started, it's the one that's actually piqued my interest the most here in round one.
Yeah. They've let us build this anticipation for about five business days here. So we are ready to see it. It will begin tonight. We appreciate coming on, Anthony. Enjoy the game, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon. Hopefully the Leafs make a little lengthy playoff run. We can have you on.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. It's Anthony Petrielli, Maple Leafs Hot Stove. As we mentioned, we got Leafs and Sens 7:30 puck drop on Sportsnet. If you're looking for the Blue Jays game, they're playing the Houston Astros tonight. That's 8 o'clock on Sportsnet 1 and here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we'll take you up to the pregame show. Doubleheader on Sportsnet will be Minnesota-Vegas at 11 p.m. Eastern puck drop. So I don't know if I will be catching much of that, to be honest. New Jersey and Carolina currently underway halfway through the first period. New Jersey with a 1-0 lead over Carolina. That's on Sportsnet 360. That's game two.
I'm sure you stayed up and watched a little hockey last night. Was there something that piqued your interest?
How about the Habs and their gritty comeback to only be ruined by Ovi's first OT winner in the playoffs. Like that stat, if you told me that, I would said you're a liar.
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
Like it makes no sense, which is great. Like, I love that it happened. I could not believe it when I saw that. And, like, he scored a million goals, and we've seen him score a million goals. And I feel like we saw that celebration from him for the first time ever. I guess it was the first time he did it. But, like, Ovi's still innovating with the Sellies. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it was crazy that he scored his first ever OT winner in the playoffs. So, but, yeah, I think I'm putting a little bit of excitement on. I'm excited to see what the Habs show because they fought to get into the playoffs. It's a fun story. And they got a lot of young guys getting a big opportunity here. And I thought they showed a lot of pushback in the third period to get it to overtime. And, you know, I don't think they could hang their head on that. I think that's going to be a really great series. And hopefully it gives them a little confidence. And, I mean, pretty much can't go any further than saying what happened in that Edmonton-LA game last night. It was over, and then it wasn't, and then it was over.
Do you feel better or worse about the—we got to take a break, but very quickly. Do you feel better or worse about the Oilers after seeing that?
I think I would feel better because you know that your guys can turn it on, like, on a dime and bring a game back from, like, death. The game was over, and they have the ability when they have the right, like, when they have the players, which are Draisaitl and McDavid— to turn the game upside down. And they did that, and it fell short. But that's a confidence boost for you to say, we can do that over 60 minutes or 40 minutes, we're there.
Yeah, I mean, the superhero cape still hangs in the closet of Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
And when he decides to put it on, it's a different ball game. He was, and it was, you know, Chris Knobloch just, like, went to the well, playing the wheels off them, and they changed the game. So there is a recipe there. It's just, like, how, I guess, how attainable is that? How much can you really play McDavid? But if he's there for it, the Oilers going to be a dangerous team.
I was saying, though, yesterday in our show on the fan pregame that I thought I thought LA needed to win that game just to start things off at the home ice advantage. Maybe you can grab one or two and then put the Oilers on their heels before they get all their players back and healthy. And I'm sure they're feeling the same way. I know we saw the Drew Doughty quote where he dropped a couple swears, but they were like, wow, we almost lost that one, and that would have been devastating for them. So they got the 1-0 series lead, and I think they really need it in this series. Okay, we'll take a quick break. Sam Cosentino of Sportsnet will join us on the other side. We'll go through some more of the NHL series, not just specifically Leafs Sens. We got a couple games tonight across the network and a couple to reflect upon. We'll get you set for what else is going on in the NBA and the MLB tonight, and then we will take another break. So Sammy Cos on the other side of the break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, we are off your television screens today because
and off autopilot,
and we are dialed in here because Sportsnet will have just a massive collection of hockey games for you. There's no space for us. New Jersey and Carolina is up right now in the first period. It's 1-0 New Jersey. You got that on Sportsnet 360. There will be the Sens and Leafs game in about an hour, a 7:30 puck drop across Sportsnet, followed by their doubleheader of Minnesota-Vegas at 11 p.m. Florida and Tampa Bay also kickstart their series, Game 1. That's an 8:30 start on Sportsnet 360. And if you're looking for the Jays and the Astros, that's around an 8:10 first pitch, which is why we will have you to about the pregame show here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. In about an hour, they'll shift over to some Blue Jays talk, and that game will be up on Sportsnet 1.
So big news today in the NHL, if you missed it, the New York Islanders deciding to not retain president and general manager Lou Lamoriello.
The end of an era.
He's been managing, coaching, whatever, like at the helm for hockey teams for parts of, I believe, 7 decades.
Oh my goodness.
Like
7 decades.
82-year-old, began in 68, all the way to 2025.
Wait, starting when he was 12 years old?
No. It was, you know, the last of the 60s and now the beginning here of the 20s.
It's a lot.
you know, just trying to use stats to my advantage.
That's a lot of years.
But yeah, he's been at it for a while. I wonder if it's the end for Lou Lamoriello after they decide, that being the New York Islanders, to not retain his services. End of an era for Lou and for the Islanders. To discuss that and more, let's bring in Sam Cosentino, sports and NHL analyst. What's going on, Sam?
Well, not much, guys, but I got a couple questions first. Okay. Am I speaking with the in-season cup champ?
Yes, you have the privilege and the honor to speak with in-season cup champion. How are you? The
follow-up question is, was that AI Ailish or Ailish who is the in-season cup champ?
It's a bit of both, you know. AI Ailish might have helped with some of the picks, but we both wear the crown.
AI Ailish provided the formula, and then Ailish took,
and I delivered.
Took advantage.
And is this 32 Thoughts Cuthbert? Is that
it
what
is.
We got going?
We got a lot of titles
lots
on this show.
Going on here. It's a busy time of year, Sam.
Now I feel so truly honored to be joining the both of you. I just hope that you're not both AI, that you're both real.
No, we're real with emotions, and we're happy to have you too. So
sentience.
Thanks for coming on.
Amazing. Happy to be on.
All right, let's talk about Lou.
Were you surprised at all about the news today, Sam?
I am surprised in that he just always seems to be able to kind of get by. And I think if you look at the results the last couple of years, you know, the Islanders kind of squeaking in for a couple of years in a row and then not making the cut this year. And, you know, some of the decisions to move on guys or not move on guys. I honestly think it's probably time. Now, having said all that, I've never met the man. He is like this kind of like deity to me, who you always know is kind of around, but I've never actually met the man. I've been in the same room as him a number of times, but never met him. But all the people that I know that know him can't say enough good things about him and how they were treated. I did hear some fascinating stories about how offices had to be kept, when people were working there and that sort of thing. But he did it his way. He is kind of like Sinatra. And the one other kind of thing that I really have a great respect for is a big Springsteen fan. I've seen him backstage at a couple of Springsteen shows in my time, and I have a great appreciation for that.
If Lou saw the state of my desk here at Sportsnet, he'd be horrified. I'd be out of a job.
You've got empty Tupperwares from weeks and empty Timbits boxes
he'd be horrified.
With nothing in it.
We're doing the Timbit thing, you empty the box, put it on my desk. That's not fair.
That's not true. No, isn't it?
You could tell him it was AI that did.
Yeah. AI would keep a real clean and tidy desk, though, so we're not sure about that one. All right, let's go around the NHL. We're talking to Sam Cosentino of Sportsnet. So we talked a little bit about last night's games. Ovi scoring his first OT playoff winner. Like, that is almost unbelievable, as Justin saying that Lou Lamoriello was coaching and GMing for 7 decades. Ovi just getting his first in the playoffs. Like, could you believe that stat?
I was talking to Kelly Rudy about that, and I'm like, you know, 3-on-3, you could see where, you know, a game goes to overtime, whatever else, and you could see how, okay, maybe he's not going to be your first choice, especially in the latter years. Mm-hmm. But in a 5-on-5 situation, which is what all playoffs have been forever and ever, surely he's the guy who's going to be out there with his ability to finish it with just one shot. And the fact that he's got, I think it's 78 playoff goals all time, and that's the first, that was really odd to me. Maybe what was more odd is where he scored it from, as opposed to the spot we're used to seeing him score from, right in front of the net there and using that great hand-eye coordination. So I had to wonder how he was going to show up in these playoffs based on, you know, all the partying and the fun of getting the record and just how Washington completely as a team deferred to him that they were going to be able to get things back on the rails. But he was awesome last night with in on all 3 goals, scoring 2 of them. Mm-hmm. You can't say enough about Ovi and what he did last night.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. Not that I was expecting, okay, now the real Washington Capitals team identity will show up because we know Ovechkin is that. But, you know, this is a guy who had an unbelievable year, attained that record. And, yeah, it still does run through him, a reminder, I guess, last night. We saw a big-time cross-check from Alexiev in that game. We've seen a lot of cross-checks so far in the playoffs, and none of which have gone disciplined, I guess, by the NHL. We even saw Deneau, like, he didn't, I don't think, take a cross-check from Wallman, but it was called last night in the Oilers and Kings game. It feels like that's the new, like, major issue in terms of referees having to deal with what is a violent act, but something that is so gray area at the best of times.
It's funny because, you know, I was watching the game last night, the Winnipeg game, and that was as physical a game as I've seen in quite some time. And I think it was, who was back there? It was Stanley maybe with like four cross checks to a guy's back. And both Colby and Luke are sitting there saying, "Nah, come on, it's a playoffs. That's not a penalty." And I'm like, "Well, maybe the fourth one, guys. Maybe the fourth one, you know?" So it is interesting how that has come to fruition. But with all the other stuff being taken out, as soon as your stick goes parallel to the ice, you get called for hooking. You get into someone's hands, you're called for hooking. The interference stuff that goes on. And I guess this is kind of the new thing that guys are going to try and take the rule to the limit to and see where it goes. So, you know, it's funny because we had this conversation last night about, like, what changes? Does the officiating change or do the players change? And I know Elliot has been pretty hard on the players are the ones that change. The game is still officiated the same way. For me, I've always had an issue with, I want to see the game officiated the same way it's officiated in the regular season. Now, if guys are being harder because there's more at stake, then you have to find where that line is and not go over it. I always feel like enough stuff gets let go to think that, well, this is sort of a different game now. And maybe that's why the smaller players aren't having the same success that they used to. So I would like the game to be officiated exactly as it is in the regular season. And the game I use as an example is, like, look at the Four Nations final. Mm-hmm. The speed of that game, the skill of that game was unbelievable. And there was a lot of hard physical play, not tons of huge hits, but I mean, like, you know, 50-50 draws in the corners, open ice kind of stuff. Yet they played within the confines of the rules. And while we might not see that depth of talent on a nightly basis, you do have the 16 best teams in the league. And the talent extends well into the third line for all of these teams. And so to think that it should be called that way and the game should be played that way, I would love to see it. But I just don't know if we're going to get there.
That's a perfect segue into the Battle of Ontario, because a lot of talk about officiating and cross-checking and physicality in that one. We got game two in about just under an hour. How do you think this one differs from Sunday? Sunday was a super success-filled, like, if you had check marks for any Leafs goal, they pretty much hit them all, and the Sens not so much. Like, did the Sens maybe ease into this and understand, okay, take a deep breath, let's play in our own zone, or play in our own, like, not outside of ourselves when we come into game two, and maybe have taken a deep breath after what happened on Sunday?
They'll be ready today, there's no question. Like, I did a number of Sens games this year, and I just can't say enough about the job that Travis Green has done, because every time you thought they were going to take that, oh, there go the Sens again, that step back, they didn't actually, and took steps forward. So things will be different tonight. And this is, for me, it's not a four-game series. So let's get those two things out of the way. When I look at, I think a lot about baseball when I look at the first game in that series. Back when I was working in baseball, guys used to get the benefit of the doubt because of their experience. Carlos Delgado, Sean Green, you know, the strike zone might be a little tighter for those guys than the rest of the league because of their ability to draw walks and the eye that they were able to create over the course of their lengthy careers. And I think the same thing, I look at the Sens team and I think a lot about, like, this was the Leafs team 6 or 7 years ago, where you have these young guys who don't have this experience yet, and they're not getting the benefit of the doubt because they don't have the experience yet. So I think that was a real good lesson teacher for the Ottawa Senators. You're going to see a different team tonight. You're going to see a more disciplined team. You're going to see a team that's going to try and get in, you know, into the eyes of Stolarz a little more. I think you'll see a better Ullmark tonight, and I think you'll see Brady Tkachuk elevate his game to be the menace that everyone has expected him to be.
Oh, we're talking to Sam Cosentino. He'll be grinding for the next couple months on Sportsnet panels as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue. I asked Ailish this earlier. Like, how did your viewpoint of the Oilers change after last night? They lose game one. They give up six. The issue of Stuart Skinner remains, but they have this, like, trump card that they can play, which is, you know, 97, the best player in the world, who wills them to a game-tying moment late in the third period that was obviously foiled by the Deneau goal. I think a lot of people were like, I think the stock was down, but a lot of people thought, hey, this is still a really elite team that might be just waiting for last night to really show their best. And I felt at least a little bit more confident in what they could do based on what we saw in a losing effort.
absolutely fascinating. I think my opinion of Edmonton changed six times last night in the game.
Yep.
You know, you're down 4-0. Oh, they're dead to rights. Oh, they're down 5-2. There's no way they're coming back. And I'm sitting there and I got the head bobs going, trying to stay up to watch it. And I'm like, oh, geez, they're going to get, they're going to tie this thing up. They tied it up. What the heck is going on here? And then you just think, all right, just get it to overtime and then let the big boys go and do their thing. And they can't even get it there. So no question, like Pickard's going to get a start in this series by hook or by crook. It might be as early as the next game. I think finding the balance between playing McDavid and Draisaitl, as much as you want to play them, but at the peril of the other players to keep them engaged in the game, is going to be a challenge for Chris Knobloch going forward. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you play them in that 20-minute range, and you go and lose the game, then you're being questioned as to, well, why didn't you play them more? If you play them in the 27, 28-minute range, then everyone's saying, well, how can you play them that much and have your other players still be engaged in the game? So it's a very difficult task he has with trying to manage the minutes of those two guys, yet keeping everyone on board, fresh, on their toes. I think that's one of the biggest challenges. As much as it's a nice luxury to have, it's also a huge challenge. And I think we're looking at the same things that we've talked about with Edmonton for years. The tertiary scoring, the goaltending, is the D good enough? Like, these are the three narratives that have been hovering over this team that quieted down last year when they made it to the final, but have surrounded this team for the last 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, we're talking to Sam Cosentino here, Sportsnet NHL analyst, ahead of a couple games in the NHL. And I think we would be very
remiss
to not ask you about Ziv Bouyam, because our producer, David Siss, loves this kid.
He's locked in.
But he didn't have a great debut. How tough of a spot is it to come in? Your first NHL game, game one of the playoffs against Vegas. And, you know, is there a little bit of a brighter future for our boy Ziv?
Yeah, I think Minnesota was ecstatic to get him where they did. They truly felt that he fell there. And I remember talking to some of their scouts the night before the draft, and they thought maybe Parekh or you know, might be there. They didn't think they would have a chance at Bouyam, and of course he was there for them. And so when I look at the impact that these guys recently signed out of college are having, like, think about Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini this year, okay? Think about more recently, Jimmy Snuggerud looked absolutely dynamite for St. Louis last night, scored a goal, unfortunately scored one on his own net as well, but really involved and engaged in the play, getting some power play time. Think about Ryan Leonard and the circus that he walked into and how much success he's had and the pest that he's going to be for the rest of the league moving forward. And then you look at a guy like Bouyam, who really brings an all-around game to the table. Like, he skates, he can play with some physicality, he zips pucks, probably not always at the best time as we saw, but he does have, like, game-changing abilities. And I think that it's really difficult when you step in from college and your first NHL game is a playoff game and you're like, whoa, like, this is about 10 times more intense and fast and physical than what I'm used to playing. And I just played at the highest level in college hockey. So there's no doubt he's going to be a great player. Difficult situation for him. I think very highly of the player. I know my partner, Jason Buchla, who I work with on the draft, absolutely loves this guy and felt it was a steal for Minnesota where they got him. And I think brighter things are ahead, but tough time to try and make your mark.
You normally have to wait for the main event, and maybe we're doing that in the hockey world this year, the playoffs, with Florida and Tampa finally getting going tonight. What are your expectations for that series?
I think it's going to be, I guess I can't say that four-letter word, but it's going to be a fest. I think it's just going to be nasty amongst these two teams. I think the fact that they've had to wait a little longer will probably make the first 7 or 8 minutes like a little bit slow. But I think once these two teams get into it, they are going to be fully engaged. And I think it, for me, it's kind of cool to see that we actually have a Florida rivalry that is meaningful, that is truly hatred in the game of hockey. I love that. And I can't wait for it. You know, we'll see what happens with Tkachuk and what the lineups look like. I expect everyone to be playing and playing fully. But I am not sleeping on Tampa Bay, I can tell you that. I think Vasilevsky's back to being the best goalie in the league, maybe save for Hellebuck. I think Kucherov's the best playmaker in the league. I've thought that forever. You know, you look at Gensel, he's so smart. He's so gifted, puts the puck in the net. Same thing with Braden Point. There are a lot of good things that this Tampa team brings to the table that I think people are sleeping on, but I am not.
No, we're not sleeping, Sammy, because we have had lots of talks about Tampa Bay on our show. We think they could have some real Stanley Cup upside. So we've got a couple futures bets in there. We'll see what happens. Nice.
That's
we'll
the advantage of A. Eilish, by the way. Doesn't
she crunches
have to sleep.
The numbers.
Doesn't beep, have
beep,
to sleep.
Oh, yeah, I don't have to sleep. Yep, I never sleep. Sammy, we appreciate you coming on. I know it's going to be a busy couple weeks and months ahead for you. So appreciate the time, and we'll chat soon.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. Take care. Have a great night, guys.
You too. Beep, boop, beep, boop. Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet NHL.
Very nice. Big night, too, in the NBA. Three games on the slate.
On the docket.
On the docket. Pacers looking to go up 2-0 on the Bucks. We'll get the return of Damian Lillard, who was sidelined with a blood clot for the last month. He was jawing with Tyrese Halliburton at the end of last game with the Bucks. So Pacers will have a little bit more to deal with tonight. And then OKC, fresh off the fifth largest margin of victory in the NBA playoffs history, can go up 2-0 on the Grizz. I think I expect that to happen, given what we saw.
Okay.
But the big game, the main event, I guess, to continue that.
Lots of main events tonight.
The Lakers looking to rebound after game one loss at home to the six-seeded Wolves. It's a must-win, I think, tonight for the Lakers. Can't drop two at home. Luka and LeBron will have to rebound.
Lots of news around Anthony Edwards today because of a spicy quote.
That was
spicy,
a spicy
comments
quote.
And spicy gestures towards the crowd. He has now paid $370,000 in fines this season, the most in the NBA. $50,000 for an obscene gesture to a fan, $35,000 for throwing the ball in the stands, $50,000 to obscene gestures to an official, $100,000 for profane language on live television. That's you can't have that. $75,000 for criticizing officials, $25,000 for profane. Why can't I say that?
Profanity.
Like, saying like propane. Get my propane checked.
Get
language
your Sutton on with that.
During media, and then the latest was an obscene gesture, which we will not explain to you on the radio.
You can look it up. And despite all that, he's like an NBA babyface.
Yeah,
like everybody loves him.
Do they?
I think so.
Oh, okay.
He's a little, I mean, he's one of the most, I feel like he's one of the most real NBA players. Like a lot of them say exactly what is on their mind, but like he is unapologetically himself. And I think that's why he resonates. But yeah, despite all that, that's quite the rap sheet.
That's a lot of
and
money.
Yet, yeah. He seems to be, you know, he said he didn't want to be the face of the NBA. I think a lot of people want him to be the face of the NBA despite all that, which is interesting, I guess.
Okay, speaking of money, let's do a couple of best bets before we take a break. You know, there's been a lot of talk about Scott Laughton over the last little bit, and I thought he had a pretty good game one. I think he's been getting better and better as the Leafs continue on after he became a part of the blue and white. I think tonight's a passion night. So a Laughton goal is 8-1. Not a lot of value on any of the big guys, core four, who all got multiple points in the first game. So I'm looking for a little value, and I like Laughton tonight.
Has Laughton taken the mantle as number one passion guy?
I think he's got some passion, for sure.
What's gone into that for you?
I just like the way he plays. Like, he's settled in. I didn't like it at the beginning, and I think a lot of people were curious about the price that was paid. But he seems to be a guy, and everything you read about him in the locker room, music guy, he's just...
Nona's home cooking too.
Nona's home cooking. He gets a nice goal because of that.
I'm going to go to that big game in the association tonight, LA and Minnesota. I'm going to play the over 210. Lakers scored 95 in the loss. I think 105's got to be the bare minimum for them. And I think they probably win the game because desperation will set in. So maybe they win it 105-100 and it doesn't hit. But I think LA might score 120 tonight because there's going to be some desperation. So I like the over 210. Maybe parlay that with the Lakers win to make it about plus 150. But yeah, I think the Lakers bounce back offensively. Maybe you can play the team total. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to take the full over. I think it's going to be a high scoring game.
I have one more for you, and it's a Tkachuk parlay. It looks like both Matthew and Brady, well, Matthew back in the lineup after conveniently being ready for game one.
And calling Brady, shenanigans?
Well, I'm just saying, it is convenient, is it not? And Brady Tkachuk looking to maybe rebound after five shots on goal in the first game of the series, but not really much else in terms of presence. So if you want to parlay them both to score, it's plus 871.
Okay. Okay.
Did you see the information about Tkachuk's deciding to travel with Brady this time around and not Matthew?
I did see that Brady mentioned that. I think it's first time. They've been doing Matthew thing forever. May not last that long, though.
I know, it's interesting.
They could easily just jump ship and be like, okay, Brady, come along with us. We got another room in the van. Let's go to Florida.
In some way, they could also match up in the second round, which would be very fun for the parents, but they chose to travel with Brady on this journey, and they were spotted at game one of the opening series for Leafs and Sens, and Mike Fuda saw them, and they were taking the Brady sucks chance well, apparently.
Okay. Big Walt can handle that.
Yeah.
Can handle himself. I do hope not this year, clearly, but I do hope that Ottawa and Florida, with the Tkachuks in tow, do match up one year. Like, that will be awesome.
I think it would be fun.
It will be very cool. And I'm not saying Brady's going to get all fed up if he loses the Leafs this year and go somewhere else, but I worry it might not happen.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We got about 30 more minutes here on the Fan Pregame. We'll go through quite a few things on the other side of the break and get you set for Blue Jays baseball, which will take over around 7:30 with an 8-ish first pitch against the Houston Astros. We'll be right back.